Went to the ball game last night. Yeah.
Did you stay the whole way?
No, it is. No, I almost till the eighth. The reason why I left the pause was because, yeah, you, I, what is your reaction to that as you were listening to it? I went to the ball game yesterday and then you go, oof. All right. Predictable thumping. Jays are already using an opener and whatever. I actually thought Trevor Richards did fine. He was the highlight of the evening. If there was anything, it was that. It wasn't the George Springer, it's 8-0 and then he hits a home run. Like, nice, highlight of the night for the Blue Jays. He was fine, but the rest of the game, not so much. Just a pretty lifeless offensive performance. Again, another good pitcher that shuts down the Blue Jays. And yeah, I know it's Corbin Burns, but everybody that faces this offense ends up being Cy Young. It's like, oh, is that the best pitcher on planet Earth? You know, you could do a good trick, actually, if you ever wanted to bring a little kid to a game or, you know, someone who doesn't know anything about baseball. You could really convince them that they're seeing a generational pitcher every time. You go, hey, this guy, it could be anyone. This pitcher, yeah, watch. They're going to get all the Blue Jays out. The Jays are going to score like no runs against this guy because he's famous. You're seeing a Hall of Famer. You lucky duck. You're going to see a Hall of Famer tonight. And no one would be able to tell. No one that doesn't know the game would be able to differentiate between just a regular fifth starter and a Hall of Fame pitcher. So that's the good side. That's the upside. A quick couple thoughts before I do Stanley Cup Finals preview with Colby, because I just don't have... I'm going to do some more with Ennis tomorrow. He and I are going back to the ballpark on Thursday. I got to go. Like, I do love going to Jays games, and even when a team is bad, but this is a different kind of bad. Then this is very annoying kind of bad. But here's my only actual practical thought from this baseball game yesterday. Well, I have two. One is just simply, it sucks how bad Bowden Francis is. Like, I get it. He's a depth starter, but that was one thing that this team actually did need. Alek Manoah started the season on the IL. Bowden Francis was a guy that people talked about in spring. And maybe I'm an idiot because I do fall for spring training narratives from time to time. And that's on me. Hand up. That's on me. But he got a lot of press clippings. And even some of the people that were down there were talking about him as one of the stories of spring. Like, hey, maybe this guy is actually a something. And he performed admirably a season before, right? He was quality. And yeah, I don't even think he's a sixth starter, which is super disappointing because you can say all you want about how good the Jays front of the rotation is, which it is. We just talked about Kevin Gausman yesterday and how it's been a disappointing season. But overall, most teams would still love to trade positions with the Blue Jays where you go Barrios, Kikuchi, Gausman, Bassett, right? And then even Manoah at least showed you a little bit of something. But one of the problems with this organization has not just been, hey, they haven't developed positional players that have supplemented the stars around Vladdy and Bo. They haven't really developed those secondary arms. Some they've had to move out in trades, like Simeon Wood Richardson, which is fair enough. But not a lot of hits. Not a lot of guys that have come up and you've gone, wow, they developed that arm? Or, ooh, that would be an exciting arm to see. It's been Tiedemann. And I can't even tell you what's going on with Ricky Tiedemann right now, which I'm guessing isn't a great thing given where the pitching staff might be. I have no clue. What's up with Ricky? Is he hurt? Is he healthy? Maybe that's my job. Maybe I should know this. Maybe I shouldn't admit it. But I have no clue what's going on with old Ricky Tiedemann right now. Anyway, it's the 14th time this season where they've had five hits or less, so it was more about the offense. But I did have the Bowden Francis thought because I was excited for him. I did think that there was something there. I was hopeful that there was something there, that they had found a diamond in the rough. You don't need them all to be superstars. You do need to hit on some depth starters. And yeah, it just feels like they're pretty paper thin there, that you go from they're starting five guys or they're starting four guys, really, because again, it's being generous adding Manoah to that list. And then their drop-off is significant. And no, I don't think that they could have signed more pitchers or there was another guy that they should have given a contract to, because most of those free agent starting pitchers didn't want, you know, to have minor league deals to get an opportunity to pitch in Toronto. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about good minor league starting pitchers that had the potential to come up and give you some quality innings, not what Bowden Francis gave you yesterday, which is just meatballs. And boy, yeah, Ryan Mountcastle is just... what a Blue Jays killer. Everybody, when he got up to the dish in those big spots, it's just, hey, oh yeah, this guy's going to kill us. This guy's going to kill us. You could hear people talking about it. That's a good, that's a reputation you want to have. Is someone, when you get up to the dish or you step on the ice or you know, wherever you are, you step on a court and people are just like, it's the, remember the Rudy Gay clip? Oh no, not Rudy Gay, even though that was outrageous. He wasn't a Raptors killer. But you want people to basically be treating you like that, I think, if you're a pro athlete in a town. That must be a fun feeling. Just Ryan Mountcastle, every time he comes to Toronto, he just knows he's going to do some damage. Anyways, last thing before Colby is just, it's impossible to ignore the chasm between these two teams. It's just, it's painful. This is now 7 of the last 10 that Baltimore has won, and they're pretty ugly scores. Like, here's some of the scores in the last 10. 10-1 yesterday, 7-2 the day before, 7-0, 6-1, 13-3. Like, that's half of the games they've played have just been blowouts for the Baltimore Orioles. They rarely just even beat Toronto in a normal way. So, yeah, getting back to sort of what I was discussing yesterday about, well, okay, if you're not going to move a major piece, right, if you're not going to trade someone that has some term or who is a star on this roster, how are you possibly going to close the divide between these two teams? Again, it's baseball. You could get into a playoff series and beat the Baltimore Orioles. No one's doubting that. It's not, although actually I shouldn't even use the NBA anymore, because the NBA has become a parody league as well, where, yeah, anybody can beat anybody now in the postseason, right? We see that with this finals of seeing the Mavericks get in. But I just, this whole idea that you can retool, that is now sort of being soft sold to everybody as we are a month and a bit away from the trade deadline, almost 2 months away from the trade deadline. I'm just not buying the idea that you can flip a couple of pending UFAs and maybe try to get off a bit of money and then all of a sudden pivot and next season you're there with the Baltimore Orioles. I don't believe you. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think that's actually been one of the mistakes of these last couple of off seasons is, not quite enough. Anyways, it's time for the man. It's been a while. Colby Armstrong, Game Notes, NHL and Sports. What's up, buddy? How are we doing? Way to wake up. Thank you for joining me this time. This is great to have you.
Yeah, I know. First off to you and your listeners for last week, I apologize. I'll start with an apology right away.
You know
away.
Why you should apologize? Is because I talked for an hour by myself.
Yeah, I know. You don't know how bad I felt. You know how bad I felt.
No, like, I don't want you to feel bad. I'm saying, imagine listening to me talk for an hour straight. Like, that's crazy.
That's why I'm apologizing to your listeners.
Yeah, dude, that's insane. Like, that's nuts. Imagine you went out to dinner with somebody and they just sat there and talked for 45 minutes in a row and then they stopped and
that's
went.
That's how my wife feels.
Yeah. She's like, how was your day? And then you talk for 40 minutes and then you go, you? You know? Yeah, she's like, what do you want me to say here? Like, what do you want me to do here? I can't do this. No, it was brutal. It was like, thank you to anybody who listens to that show and whenever I do the solo shows. But when I finish that, that's my first thought every time is, who could possibly listen to more of than 15.
I think of that all the time with myself, too.
Oh,
I had someone say to me one time, It may or may not have been Ken Reed, but he's like, you should write a book. I'm like, how many drugs are you on to think that anyone in the world would want to read even one paragraph about something in my life that? Like, that would buy a book.
No, people would, buddy. People worse than you have written books, all right?
Like,
I know that's how you feel. But I will tell you this right now. You go look at some people who have written books and athletes who have written books and tell me that you don't think you could do a little bit better than, or you'd be like him, like her, like, no, you could be, you'd be fine with it. They would figure out a way to kind of piece it together. You get my buddy Dan Robson in there. He's just an animal. You get a Stephen Brunt in there.
No, Ken Reed is my guy.
There you go.
Ken Reed's writing it.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. You get somebody like that starting piecing the all of it together, you'd be going, these are my thoughts. I guarantee you they would pull together something great. But it is, that is the worst part of this job, right?
Yeah,
and you learn this right out of the gate. Because I remember when we were first talking about this job when you started media. But you'll be talking and you feel fine. And then the second you stop talking for a second, you go, oh, my God, everything I said was so dumb. I'm embarrassed.
So dumb. I'm done. I'm done. They're on to me. They're on to me. I'm done.
Yeah. That's why every once in a while you read the mean tweet and I'm like, oh, they're so right. They figured it out.
And the thing is, like, I don't live in Toronto, so a lot of work that I do when I come up there, there's a lot of nights in the hotel by myself with those, with Lito. You know, you're like rehashing the show you just did, and you're just like, by yourself.
Dude. You got
by yourself in your room at like 1 a.m. after doing the late game in Vancouver, and I'm just like, oh no.
Just the full scary setting in, like, I'm terrible at this. Oh my God. I'm gonna scroll Twitter, see if anybody say anything about me. Oh my God, they hate me. They hate me so much. No, you gotta be like Denzel. Yeah. You know that movie? Did you ever see Flight with Denzel?
Yeah.
That's you in the hotel room just staring at the mini bar. Oh boy, I better get blackout because this is the only way I'm gonna be able to deal
with it. I gotta sleep somehow.
It's funny too with you because everybody loves you. You know, that's the crazy
thanks,
thing.
Buddy.
As I've never met anybody who in this business I'm like, oh, you know, Colby, kind of a garbage human, right? I've never had. I'd be shocked. I would immediately want that story. I think I would actually be more excited for that story, like the first person who's like, man, I hate that guy. So I don't know, man.
Although, there's lots.
This is actually kind of a good way to pivot because I want to talk to you about the Stanley Cup Finals. I want to spend most of the time on that. But I actually thought about you with this Mitch Marner discourse because, so I texted you yesterday. It doesn't look like his camp.
Yeah.
Wants to waive the no move. Looks like he's going to stay in Toronto, at least today. Like, maybe things change. You know, it's a long off season. It's, what, June 5th? So, of course, this should be the party line as of right now, right?
Yeah.
But I thought of you because I went, you would be the number one guy waving the no move clause in terms of the amount of heat and criticism that's coming his way. I'd walked up to you. I'd be your Darren Ferris. I'd be your agent and going, hey, man, I know you're not hacking it here.
Right?
Yeah, like, give me, it's not even a 10 team. It's all team. You know, it's 31 teams that he's put down on his list. He just wants to get the hell out of here. I can't believe the level of scrutiny that this guy is looking like anyways that he's going to be seeming to play through because, like, I don't know how into it you are with him right now or how aware you are of the level, but I'm telling you, this is as bad as I've ever seen it.
Yeah, sorry if you can hear some banging right now.
I can.
Last day of school, I'm doing the school.
Is that the school bell?
Girls. No. They took off their seatbelts. You know.
That's
animals. So.
Put your seatbelts on, girls. The car's still moving.
I will talk about Marner in 1 second. Yeah. All right, girls, here we go. This is it.
Last day of school.
Last day of school. Ooh. Enjoy the day. You guys did it.
What a good dad.
The rest of the summer, every day with your dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck, girls.
There they go.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks, God.
Well, you say
there
thank God.
There we go, buddy.
But that's now your summer, though. It's like that was the last time that they had the free babysit. You were like, oh, man. Hockey starting to slow down, finally catch my bearings a little bit. And then the second hockey ends, your kids get out of school. That's so unfair.
I said, no one wakes me up before 9:30.
Yeah.
Nobody. Yeah. You want breakfast? Pour it yourself. Figure it out.
I mean, they say let kids be resourceful. That's how they get, that's the best thing for development.
Character.
Let them do their thing. So let them run the stove. Let them cook their eggs. That's what you got to do, buddy. You say it's just for their development.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, okay, so into Marner. Can you believe that this guy wants to go through this? Like, can you believe that he's looking at it and going, no, I... Like, what does that say to you? Because part of me thinks it's admirable. Part of me goes, what the hell are you doing, man? Just, like, scrap it. Yeah. Move on.
But yeah, like, I think there's, you know, obviously there'd be options out there for him as the Leaf fans. Like, he's a good player. He's good. The thing is that we're seeing in the playoffs right now, right? And what happened? Willie's like the guy now. What remember Willie sitting out, holding out, gives his contract, huge money. You know, there's been disappointments up and down to the core four over the years. There's no question. And now it's Mitch Marner's turn to eat it a bit. I have to think, even though his huge cap hit, that there'd be teams out there that could make something work. But I think he, you know what I think of? I think he believes in their team. I think he believes they can be a team that wins. Another thing we're seeing, though, right now is in the playoffs, and for whatever reason, this kind of narrative or fact about NHL hockey has kind of been really proven this year about, you know, size, big guys, big players. You know, your big horses have to be the big guys, like Matthews, for example, comparatively to like a Barkov and what we're seeing. And, you know, where do those other guys fit in? Like, we saw like Pettersson really struggle with Vancouver, like smaller, kind of slender guy. And maybe that's just where Mitch Marner fits. So how can you insulate? Cause he's good. Like, he's a really good player. How can you insulate come playoff time? Like, the most important time. And what does that look like? And people are saying, insulate? What do you mean? He makes, you know, $11 million a year, or whatever his number is. And it's like, I get it. I know. He's a good player. And you know, you start thinking of all these other kind of really good players that are in the same boat, like Johnny Gaudreau. And you can go down the list of really good players that make really good money that you wonder in a seven-game series how they would fare, right? And so I get that, you know, the energy is down on him right now. But if he can get through the storm and he really believes in the team and being a Toronto Maple Leaf and wanting to stick it out in another opportunity with Craig Berube and you know, what that could look like in some different hands. I like you said, it's admirable. I admire it. I admire him for wanting to do that. He's living his dream, man. He's from the area. He's playing for his childhood team. And, you know, I think he cares a lot. That's my feelings on him. He cares a lot. He wants to be good there. He wants to be the guy. So I can see him wanting to stay and see the reasons why he'd want to stick out and gut out, you know, a lot of the hate and vitriol from fans right now, because it's pretty heavy, and like, who wants to go through that?
No,
like his eyes, it's like it's a definite meme of like Mitch Marner in his house at night, maybe with like, you know, like the close up of the eyes all bloodshot, like, you know, like Stewie, like from Family Guy, when he's like in a fetal position on the floor and his eyes are bugging out.
Or when he's just where he rolls over and he cries himself to sleep because he's like, it's like, that's got to be it. That's why when you were like, he's living his dream, I'm like, I can't imagine this was part of the dream where he was, you know,
scoring. No, that's not what you envision. There's no question that's not what you envision. But the rest of the stuff, yes. And I think as much, I think he cares. I think he cares about wanting to be good there. And I hope it works out. I like Berube. I really I like Tree Living. I really like him. And I guess it's just like a wait and see if there's going to be anything different. It's been how many years now, but
8 seasons of it.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think 8's enough. And yeah, people always point to like, oh, okay, well, you know, I've had enough. I think most fans have had enough. You know, it actually, though, I'm glad you brought up the Vancouver thing, because that's kind of how I feel about it ultimately. Is I don't have anything like personally against Mitch Marner. Of course, I think he cares. Like, you know, I think it's kind of, I think it's crazy when people start talking about the players as if they don't care. Do I think that there's been guys throughout NHL history that haven't? But yeah, I don't think that there's like a million of them. And I don't think that, I don't think that's the vast majority, especially when it's like superstars. But what I will say is, like, you know, your buddy Merles, he always pointed out with Vancouver, too small, too perimeter amongst their best guys. And that was the thing he kept saying about Hughes, and he was taking the hate and he was taking the heat. And he was saying the same thing about Pettersson, and he's taking the hate, and he was taking the heat from all the Vancouver guys that are breaking everybody's brains. Like our poor boy Gazdick was like, he smelted down.
Oh, he saw him have a rant the other day.
Yeah, he's like, I've had enough, and he fed the sharks. I was like, no, Luke, you can't let him know. You can't let
he
him see.
He leaned into it.
Yeah, you gotta ignore them. You gotta look the other way. They're the Vancouver haters or the Twitter haters. It's like,
Lord of the Rings, that Eye of Sauron thing. Like, you can't look right at it. You got to try to look away. You got to pretend that it's not there. But, exactly. Yeah, I just, I feel the same way where he's just not that guy come postseason time. Yeah, he's a 100-point player in the regular season. He's dynamic. He's all these different things. He helps get you there. You don't want to lose a trade, but it's just it's too much of the same thing, and they've tried building other types of teams around those dudes to supplement it. But especially when you lose a guy and you have Mitch and you need him to drive the bus, we saw it this year, and I think that was the big conclusive thing is Matthews wasn't right. They didn't have Nylander, and everyone looked at to him and said, do something, show something. Just get one game. Just get two games on your back, right? And he just never had it. And I kind of feel like that's it for them, that the formula's got to change. But I can't decide whether or not I'm with you on the admiration of, hey, see it through, or just kind of, hey, man, this is delusional and you should be moving on because this is better for everybody involved, including yourself. Like,
you know what I love about it?
I want to see him somewhere else.
You know what I love about hockey right now in the playoffs right now? It's like Rempe comes into the NHL and they're like, oh God, this guy played 3 minutes a game. I get it. But like, he took a splash, man. He cannonballed in and he was just going. We saw like Golden Knights win and they have all these 6'5" ogres from Western Canada on their team. You know, we're looking around and talking to Tkachuk last series, not this past one, but maybe it was just before this, the Eastern Conference final, where he talked about, you know, you have to have big D in this league. You have to have some big guys that can, you know, take the brunt and take, you know, those matchups and be those kinds of guys. And I think we're starting to see like where it went to like smaller skilled guys, but now the big guy skill is like catching up, and we're seeing big guy presence like always be a factor. But I feel like it got taken out of the narrative a little bit. But there's just a thing there. Like, you've gotta be still in hockey. You've gotta be able to be big and withstand and, you know, push through. And you know, I think more than ever through these playoffs, I think we're seeing how much that matters in certain areas. Like, look at the Oilers. Would they be like when Darnell Nurse, who takes his criticism as well, but when he wanted to be that physical guy in the last few games of this past series and like ram around and just play solid, like bang around hockey, like he was rock solid. He was so hard to play against, and he can skate too. Look at Ekholm. Look at the addition of Ekholm and what that's mattered with that. And it's I know it's different because Marner is a forward, but I think, you know, if you look at the way some of these forwards play, Sam Bennett, for example, not a huge guy, total lunatic. You know, and he has skill and touch to back it up as well.
Yep.
So he can give you that. And I think that never more than ever in the last year and a bit has really started to push itself ahead again on a game that started thinking like, it doesn't matter how big you are, as long as you're really good and as long as this and that. But I mean, if you watch it, it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Dude, you're right. I think that's an awesome point that the size and the skill is starting to catch up, because that used to be the thing for the little guys to be able to get in, right? And it was, hey, you got to be the most skilled dude. But now the big guys have to be that too. Like, you can't just make an NHL career to being a one-dimensional player, right? You can't just be the fighter.
You can't be one-dimensional, 100%.
Right, you got to be able to skate. You got to be able to break the puck out. Otherwise, it's just like, yeah, you're like, oh, okay, well, no, you're easily replaceable. There's just so many guys who can have.
And you know, there's smaller players that play that style too. Mm-hmm. Like, I was impressed with Connor Garland. He's a small player.
Yeah, but he's nasty.
He's over pucks. He's on it. He's nasty. He's involved. He's not on the outside. Like, he's a threat and he's not one dimensional.
No, what was the big criticism of him during the playoffs? He was like, dude, chill out a little bit sometimes. You know, that was his number one thing. It was like, hey man, we need you to just relax for a second here. And I keep going back, you know, they had the interview on Chicklets with Pastrnak when he talked about the fight with Tkachuk, and he's
yeah,
man, I just felt as though if I didn't fight him, it was going to juice them up. And I thought about that dichotomy versus Tkachuk versus Marner the year before, where he's in his face and Marner was just trying to do the smile thing. Like, he wasn't bothered, but it looked like he was getting bullied. And I went, it's just different, man. I think that there are some parts of it that you can't teach. And if you are going to be a smaller player, You just do. You have to play with that edge. You have to play with that tenacity. You have to play with that fearlessness. And it just that hasn't been there in the playoffs. The skill is there. There's moments where he'll thread a beautiful pass. And you go, my God, that's incredible. The ability to, you know, break up plays and passes. The one thing that I think he still gets underrated for is that he's got a little Datsyuk to him in terms of the way that he reads plays.
He does.
You know?
He's so smart. That's why he's just
exactly.
He's brilliant.
Exactly.
Smart.
But it's just the other stuff. It sounds so caveman, but it's true. It's just like you can see that that's not there, and that's why he can just disappear from games, and you're like, is he playing tonight? You don't know.
Yeah. When it gets a little hard and it gets out of that element of his comfort area with the game, it gets a little hard for him to push himself in there, and it's just how it is. But like, he can make things out. Like, we've seen him block shots too, like in tough times in the game where it's like, wow, that was huge, you mm-hmm. know, that was Kahuna's type of hockey. But I think when it comes down to that big boy hockey and it gets tight, there's adjustments made and matchups done in a playoff round, it gets harder. And we're seeing just in general, you know, the bigger style players are the players that play kind of that bigger style game being massive factors.
Yo, so I was thinking, let's pivot to the Stanley Cup Finals now. Do you feel like there's been a bigger, like, when's the last time it felt as though the entire hockey community wanted it so bad for one player? Like, did you see the Greg Cote thing, the Florida guy that wrote the article on McDavid saying he's overrated?
Mick overrated.
It was just like, yeah, I get it.
Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, he's just a Florida guy that's a columnist. He's like on Le Batard. Anyway, it's like, I didn't take it too seriously. I'm like, yeah, it's content. Someone's going to write the Zag piece. Someone's going to eventually do that. But it does feel like forever, hockey, the people who cover it, the people who are in it, have looked at McDavid as that next generational player. We all just want him to have his moment. And I don't feel as though anyone outside of Florida or just, you know, Oilers haters, people in this country that really don't want to see Edmonton win because they want to have their team be the first Canadian team to win a cup since 93, that everyone is kind of pulling in the same direction of hoping that this is sort of the legacy cementer for Connor McDavid, that he can get his first cup.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing about it is with me and being around, you know, Crosby early in his career and mm-hmm. seeing, you know, the hopes and expectations on him and kind of like what you're supposed to do. Like, you're supposed to be a guy that does this. And as good as Connor is, which is unreal, mm-hmm. like we all know this, he hasn't done it yet. And it's been up and down. And, you know, we see him in interviews where he can't even, it's hard for him to muster up good times at all. Mm-hmm. In certain situations. But for people or players that are supposed to be those guys, it's just so different. It's just so different. And yeah, you cheer for Canada to win. Okay. Yeah. You can, you know, hope that like, oh, I hope he gets it, but it's like bigger. It's bigger. Like, do you see what Elliot tweeted about the merchandise sold last game or no. whatever this past series? He sent a tweet out. I don't know if you have time to look it up while I'm yammering,
yeah.
But it's like Edmonton sold more merchandise after like record setting merchandise sales, I believe last series, like this series is like through the roof.
Yeah,
remember
right
how in
here,
Edmonton when
it.
He signed? Yeah. What is it?
It's fans set a new merchandise sales record for any Stanley Cup playoff game. First three rounds working on the numbers, but one of, Vancouver's, this is 13% higher. So yeah, merch record after that win.
Yeah, because people are going nuts, of course, but like, this is McDavid. This mm-hmm. is what these guys do. This is what Crosby does. This is what Gretzky did before that in Edmonton and in the NHL. It's bigger than like even all of that, what these guys are and what they mean to the game. And so when you have the pressure of that on top of you, like, this is more. This just means so much more. As you said, it's just like, this is like supposed to, like, aren't they building, like, they got a new rink. This amazing state-of-the-art arena. They got condo buildings around the arena, hotels, like a whole little mini city built around, you know, mm-hmm. this player. This is what you get. You get record sales. You get record everything. But it's expected, though, at the same time, for the hockey, that you bring Stanley Cups to your city and your fan base. And so and when you can do it, when you do what you're supposed to do, or like when, you know, all the talk is rolling in about what you're going to mean and what it's going to be, and you actually do it, that's a game changer.
Yeah.
And you know, it took Ovi a while. Ovi was supposed to be that guy. He got it done. But, you know, from what we've seen from Connor, never mind Connor and Leon combo over the last number of years, this is like, this is just more. It's just more for them. And I look at it that way for them.
Yeah.
I want Edmonton to win. Don't check Twitter. Do I think like Florida will win? I do. That's just my take. But I want Edmonton to win for all those factors. Plus, I'm from out west. I grew up. You know, I know how much it means that fan base, and like, you know, even our country too. You got to get Stanley Cup back up there. But it's cup. It's accomplishing something that like was, you know, years in the making of getting this guy, all the hopes and dreams of everything on him.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is too, is like, man, McDavid is 27, right? Like, and what was Sid when he made his first one? 20, 21? Was he? Yeah. It was like, he's a baby when he first.
Eight.
Yeah. So he was
like 3 years in the league.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It happened right away. That was his third year in the league when he won, right? Not his third year when he first went.
09 they won.
Okay, yeah, no, 08, yeah, 08 they lost, so yeah. But it's like, he got it right away, and he was a younger player coming in. Like, we've had McDavid for a while, and you look at the landscape of the salary cap and the parity in the league, and
yep.
I just think that there's some people that really care about hockey and care about the legacy of the great ones and know that he is one of them, that fear that piece of, oh no, man, don't let this guy go throughout his prime and not have these moments. So the fact that we at least get this one early is great, because it is a little spooky that, you know, it's going to be harder than I think it ever has been to keep getting back there, especially when you're in like a Canadian market right now and you're looking at, it's just Florida team after Florida team, the untaxed teams that are there, and what's going to happen with like Dallas, same thing, and Vegas. Which is why I think that's like a conversation for a separate day about trying to figure out a different kind of competitive taxation rate or way around this with the cap. But either way, it really does feel different in terms of the anxiety of needing a guy to win and the amount of opportunities that he's going to get. But okay, I want to ask you this one too. I don't know if you ever had a conversation.
McDavid even beat the tax rate. McDavid is that good that he's taking on the government, big government tax rate.
Good on
him. That's unreal.
Good on him. So Sid lost that first conference finals. And I'm curious if you guys ever talked about that first one versus the second one. What was different for him? Like, if with McDavid going into the Stanley Cup finals, like they used the reference, I can't remember who said it, but the Gretzky has the famous saying, right? That there's three seasons. That is the regular season, the playoffs, and then the Stanley Cup finals. And yeah, you know Sid really well, and I'm guessing that you talked to him at those times or have talked to him about these times. Something that maybe surprised him about his first Stanley Cup final, or something that he would want to impart towards Connor McDavid if he was given the opportunity to.
I just think you don't know, and I think that's a good point by Wayne. And I mean, I don't know. I've never been to a Stanley Cup final, so I don't know. But just being around it, the heaviness, like the magnitude, all that stuff, it's different. There's no question it's different. And when the stakes are high and the energy's up. Now, like talking to Sid, like Sid's just like so driven, and you can see like McDavid, how McDavid just wants to win. And like the times that we see his emotional outbursts or emotional explosions is like, you know, when he's playing the game, like he saves his excitement for the ice big time with, you know, how he feels. And, you can see it on them when they're in moments and getting it done, or, you know, post game hugging the boys around Skinner. But I just think you don't know until you know. And I think it's going to be a situation for them where it's kind of uncharted territory. Knobloch had to talk about that the other day and ended up partially the Bills took a stray off of that kind of asked the Buffalo Bills, he said, about, you know, experience in the final and what that means. So, you know what? You've got to face it. You got to experience it. And I think, you know, there was a steady, like we made the playoffs Sid's second year. Mm-hmm. That next year they went to the final, lost. The next year they went to the final, won. When we made the playoffs and lost out to Ottawa that year, first time in the playoffs, At the end of the year, we're all hanging out, and I just remember us saying, like, man, we're gonna win the cup. Like, all of us were saying that. Like, we knew we were on our path to, like, being good. And, you know, yes, we had major factors, right? Like, you got two-headed monster, those young guys. They had a good mix of veteran guys as well that we knew were going to be around. And it just was like feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know even this year if Edmonton felt that way. Like, there's always pressure when you're McDavid to be the guy to give you answers. And when you're Crosby to give you the answers, but you have to have a lot of things around you that works. And you have to have a lot of, you know, players in place, roles, all that stuff that works. And when you have it and you know, like against Dallas, Edmonton, the one thing that like we never talk about them for, and we have a lot in these playoffs, is their defensive ability. Like, they give up no high danger scoring chances virtually. Mm-hmm. Off the rough, not too much at all. Like, it's just been like down defensive effort. Like, is that more than anything one thing that they needed the most? You know, I would say yeah, the awareness to that and a system and style to play that, and you know, whatever Knobloch and Paul Coffey and Stewart, the other assistant coach, that runs their penalty kill, which has been out of this world as well. Like, mm-hmm. We always talk about their power play and kind of this explosive offense. Like, all that stuff is like, now they're, I think more than anything, like, oh, this is what the Stanley Cup feels like. Oh, this is what winning hockey feels like. This is winning playoff hockey feels like. And I think that more than anything is what they've found. And through that series, what was it, game four, down 2-0, mm-hmm. rattled off 5 goals to win 5-2, game five, shut down Dallas. They didn't even look like they were there, smoked them. And then obviously close it out game six by, you know, just playing complete shutdown hockey. It's amazing how they just kind of solved Dallas. But also, I think they solved for themselves too, through what they've been going through. And especially through those three games, is like, this, we can do this kind of hockey.
That's why I feel better about them going in this series, man. You know, like,
That's why I'm like an idiot if Florida wins. And I said,
I think Florida's going to win too. Like, I don't know how you could project Edmonton as the favorites. Like,
I thought they were going to wax Vancouver. No, it was like a pretty defensive, tight series. Dallas, the boa constrictor team that just chokes teams out as they go, as the game goes on. Don't give them the lead. You're done. You'll never do it. Mm-hmm. Well, that trend was bucked against the Oilers, and it was like the Oilers were the ones that boa constrictored them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I get the final, and I'm like, oh, Florida, their demo, look at them. They're physical. Sam Bennett's going to remove your kidneys. Like, what's going to happen? Bobrovsky's like unreal right now. I'm almost talking myself into saying Oilers.
No, but you know what though? You just tapped into something there, which is I don't think Edmonton is going to be at all intimidated with or struggle with Florida's edge. Like, I think that they're going to be fine in that regard. Like, I don't think there's anything Sam Bennett is going to do that's going to affect the way McDavid and Draisaitl play, you know, the way that their top guys are going. And I think that down the lineup, they've got the right mix of guys to handle that as well, yeah. Right? Even like you look at dudes that have struggled, like Nurse. I'm not concerned about Nurse, you know. I'm not concerned about the ability of the Florida Panthers to kind of get in their heads and displace their game. What I would say is like, yeah, you know, maybe now we go into X factors in the series is like, there's a couple things. One is I'm still nervous about obviously Skinner and the goaltending, but also Edmonton's ability to protect leads. They've had just too many instances this postseason where they've started hot. Even that closeout game where they get a couple of power plays, They go up, they look like they're kind of humming, and then it's what, two periods where they just kind of go to sleep and they're not themselves. Yeah. And that was really why Vancouver was in it. But you know what the other thing is too, is, and this was game six, and this is the big thing for Florida for me anyways, is that Dallas forecheck getting in on Edmondson's D pairings, especially after their top group, it was like a bit of a nightmare for turnovers and just the offense that the Stars were able to generate. And I'm thinking that this Florida team that can send genuinely three waves at you of awesome forward groups, that's going to be basically the swing in the series is whether or not those guys, like, or whether or not Edmonton's going to be able to handle that pressure consistently.
Yeah. I think it's like when I watch Florida, like Florida plays at a pace, right? Like their team pace, the way they play, the way they swarm and check and like kind of reckless abandon. And it's, it's as chaotic and aggressive as it looks. It's organized and detailed. I think their pace is so much different, like way different than Dallas. Like they have a relentless pace to their five-man game, the way they play. The one thing that could change it though is Oilers' power play, because forever they don't care if they take penalties. It's kind of been weird, like, to watch Florida and the way they play. Like it has never bothered them. It's like, oh well, we'll just try to kill it. This is where we play. But this you're facing a different monster completely. So styles make fights, man. And I can't wait to see how Edmonton handles that aggressive swarming forecheck and play from the Florida Panthers. And I can't wait to see how this series kind of takes on a life of its own with both these teams and the way they both play. So it's going to be awesome. And how about the travel on this baby?
Yeah, it's a lot. I think for the media, for the old media dogs that are like, oh, you know, like if you got something, you know, like if you're dealing with like a wonky knee right now and you're a media member, tough. This is a tough one, you know, like it's all those airport terminal walks, like those, the amount of time
seat.
On the, middle seat, you're on the plane, you just can't get caught. Like, hey, you know that problem you have with your, you know, lower back right now? Oh, it's not getting any better.
You
know, like it's getting worse. No, the travel is a cool component. Yeah. I love the difference in the markets too, right? Where it's like the hockey hotbed versus the place where I don't, like, what, 90?
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I went to a final game last year there. I went to...
No, the in-arena crowd is good, but it's just, it's like...
It's unreal.
Yeah. No, it's great, but the outside of it... You're there. You know where the arena is and the setup.
Yeah, and nothing else.
No, that's what I mean. And it's not even almost a shot at just Panthers fans. I think that's kind of Miami sports in general. Like, or, you know, you go there and it's just, you know, everything, all their stadiums, it's like in a parking lot in the middle of nowhere. There's a vibe in the arena maybe, but not the second you step out of it. It's the nightlife, you know, we're talking about Edmonton, right? How the nightlife has to be built around the Oilers, right? That's a Canadian market thing. You know, you go to a Leafs game, you step out, you're on Front Street. It's, you're in the nightlife here. That's not Florida. That's not Miami. That's they don't go, oh, yeah, we're leaning on our sports to provide the nightlife. It's the opposite.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
When did the Oilers make the final again? Was that like 05?
Yeah.
When was that?
06, 05, yes.
Out of the lockout.
No,
yeah. 06.
God, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I think it's 06.
06, right?
Because Flames was four.
Oh, yeah, 06. 06, 07 was Sid made the playoff. Because I was playing. That was my first year. I got called up 06 out of the lockout year. Got called up right before Christmas. That year in the final, I got tickets to go to the Oilers-Canes like game. What was it? I forget. They lost 4-0, the Oilers. And it was the next game. I believe they lost with that empty netter goal from Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7. But I was at that game, nosebleeds at the old barn. Mm. My dad had got better tickets. He was down in the lower bowl.
Love that.
With his brother, my uncle, got them down there. Me, my brother, and a couple buddies up top. And it was awesome, obvious atmosphere, unreal. But then outside, like, I don't know where to go. Like, but you don't even, I was walking down White Ave.
Yeah.
And I was like, at the game, first of all, I was waving a pom-pom thingy in the air. And like, I remember later talking to Sid, and he's like, dude, you play in the NHL now? You can't do that. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you can.
I was like, buddy, it was electric. Yeah. It was electric.
No, there's
like,
no way you're not getting swept up in that. You know what, too? You don't know when it's Canadians and the Canadian teams in the playoffs, if you're at the game, because I've been to two others.
I saw Pellegrini in Vancouver going nuts. He's getting drafted.
No,
like
for sure, for sure. No, that, like, I love that stuff. But I just mean in terms of the nightlife after, you don't need to know where the bars are because you just go with the whole crowd because everyone's basically like, taking the party. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like it funnels you out of there, and you go
down. We did the White Ave thing.
Yeah.
We did the White Ave thing in Edmonton.
Toronto's the only place that doesn't have that.
Dislocated my shoulders, high-fiving people all down the sidewalk.
Like, yeah, it's the best.
Yeah. There's police every 10 steps to keep pushing people onto the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It was just insane.
Yeah,
like the action.
Best.
Then before that in Calgary, there's the Red Mile. Like that was insane.
Sens Mile was like that too.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, Toronto does have Front Street, but it's not ever labeled like as a thing. But yeah, it was Red Mile, Sens Mile, White Ave, and then I don't know what the Canucks one is, if they even have one. But either way,
I watched that documentary. It's Don't Riot.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm too embarrassed still. Too embarrassed for them still to this day. I can't do it. Okay, last one. Do you think Barkov is still underrated? Is this going to be kind of a breakout for him? Like, it's him versus McDavid. Is like, we do all this stuff. Even when we're looking at the, like, Sportsnet puts up the pictures, right, of the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's Tkachuk. Yeah. And I get it. Tkachuk is the marketable guy, and there's a cool element there of being chased from Calgary, essentially, by McDavid. Like, I really think that part of his decision.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was. That was as beatdown-y of a series as I've ever seen. Like, that was when McDavid and Draisaitl went full Shaq mode and destroyed them. And it was like, the Flames are done. The Flames are over. They broke that Flames team in a really vicious way.
Yeah, but the two guys.
That's as dominant of a series as I've ever seen two players. You know?
You say you ruined the team, but what was the ramifications? The butterfly effect.
Yeah, I know.
Tkachuk gone. Bennett's there.
Yeah.
Tkachuk and Bennett are there.
I know.
You said that, and now they're there, and now you're facing those
guys. Maybe they beat you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. What a butterfly effect.
That is a good butterfly effect. But
I do think Barkov's unbelievable. I think he looks faster than I've ever seen him. I think he looks like so much. He you know what he looks to me? He looks like a champion.
Yeah.
He looks like he's playing like a Stanley Cup champion. Like it's like a totally different vibe with his body language, the way he's moving. He's already been like a great player. We already know what he does at both ends of the ice, his 200-foot game, his size. He's all of a sudden got this, like, he looks like he's faster. He looks like he's got this jump and pop. And he just looks like he's ready to be a champion. That's what he looks like to me. That's how hard he's going to be in this series. He's a matchup nightmare because of all those things.
It's just,
and I think he's like ready. He's like ready from last year. I thought last year, He was in that kind of like, oh, wow, what is this? This is big, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think this year he looks like he's a champion. That's what he looks like.
It's just funny because that Rangers series, right? I think I looked it up. He was a -4 in the series. I think he was a -4, and I think he had 1 goal and 3 assists. And every one of those games I watched, I was like, man, that guy is a monster. You know, it's like there couldn't be less of a, you just look at the raw number stats plus that actually. So I've always been a guy of like plus minus matters a little. And now after that series, I was like, plus minus is the most meaningless stat of all time. If Barkov, you know, is -3 and you watch him in that series, you're like, yeah, who cares? Don't ever show me plus minus again after that. Like him versus McDavid is genuine. Like that is the real theater of the series to me.
Well, yeah, and then there's a stat of, like, I think, what is it, on his way, all the top players on every team, I think one guy scored 1 goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good
against
one.
Against him in the matchups.
Yeah.
There's that one stat. So it's like, yeah, that is. It's McDavid versus him.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. I actually can't wait. I wish we did this closer to the actual series because it's Saturday. And I was like, oh, nice, tonight. And it's like, no. I texted you yesterday. I was like, I already really miss it. I'm watching this crappy Jays game. I was like, I miss hockey. And it was a preview of what's coming.
I've been in bed every night at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I've been in bed every night at 10 o'clock. I got a week to recover the time. And I'm heading out on the road again. I'm going to Edmonton. And then I'm going to Florida.
You're lucky, Duck.
Going to a few of the games, so yeah, it'll be insane.
Watch the back, brother. Watch the back. All right, thanks, pal. Thanks for making time. See you later, buddy.
All right,
enjoy
you're the best, Bucks. Yeah. See you, buddy.
Colby Armstrong. Game notes, NHL and Sportsnet. Quick break. Let's come back. It will be missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we got to run. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. I'm going to get more into this tomorrow, but I think Conor McGregor never fights again. I think this is over and that this is being slow rolled, and I'm following Ariel Helwani like the rest of us, trying to get the details, but the little stuff that's on the outside, it looks dead. Anyways, see you tomorrow.